Welcome to the Embassy Pod. I'm your host, Sambo, and together with the team at the US Embassy Ulaanbaatar, we're pleased to present our seventh episode of our official podcast series in Mongolia. Through this series, we're offering you conversations with the people in our embassy and the American community who live, study, or work here to share their stories. Our theme for this episode is equality. Specifically, we wanted to talk about the LGBTQI+ community. And the reason we chose to highlight this topic is because for the last several years, our partners at the LGBT Center Mongolia has been successfully organizing the annual Equality and Pride Days in the month of August. The Mongolian Pride Week, as we call it, has been more and more successful at raising awareness and changing public perceptions. And because promoting democracy and human rights is one of our embassy's main missions, we're proud to join the virtual celebrations this year. If you'd like to learn more about the days and how you can join, make sure you stick around until the end of the episode for a special message from our friends at the LGBT Center. As for our guest today, and I say guests excitedly because for the first time in our podcast, we have two guests joining us on our episode. And we have Zach, who's our office management specialist, and Tony, our vice consul at the consular section. Welcome to the pod.
Thank you, Sambo. It's great to be here.
And as I introduced you, I mentioned the word the LGBTQI+. What does the acronym stand for? Can we start with that?
Yeah, so thanks, Sambo. The LGBTQI+ acronym stands for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, intersex. And the plus is thrown on there to include anyone else that feels part of the community, but maybe they don't have a letter for them that's part of the acronym. So it's a term that's kind of used to include as many people as possible.
So similar to the Mongolian Equality and Pride Days here, there's the Pride Month that's regularly celebrated annually, actually, in the U.S., and it's been recognized by many presidents, including President Biden, and it obviously celebrates the accomplishments of LGBTQI+ people and also recognizes the issues and creates awareness. What does the Pride Month mean to you?
Yeah, that's a great question. So Pride Month is really important to us as members of the community. You may or may not know, but Pride Month celebrations have been going on for more than 50 years in the United States. They began back in 1970, 1 year after the riots at the Stonewall Inn, a bar in New York. One evening in 1969, the bar was raided by police, and it kind of started off a whole series of protests that kind of started the modern LGBT rights movement in the United States. And so the first year after that protest was the first Pride Parade. And since then, it's grown in magnitude, it's grown in size. We see Pride Parades all across America and across the world. But essentially, Pride Month is a time for us to recognize the sacrifices of those activists that risked their lives, risked their jobs, risked their families to live out loud and proud, live their true authentic selves. We also use Pride Month to celebrate the progress that has been made. In the last 20 years, we've seen a lot of really fast progress in the United States when it comes to marriage equality, as well as other protections for LGBT individuals in the United States. But also it's a month to advocate for changes that still need to happen. You know, around the world, there's still 69 countries where homosexuality is criminalized, and several of those countries where LGBT people are still sentenced to death just for being who they are. And so for us, Pride Month is kind of a combination of all of these achievements that we can be proud about, but also trying to be visible and recognize that there's still work that needs to be done.
Have you had the chance to attend a Pride Month celebration in person?
We have. I think we were in Colorado, in Denver, before we joined the Foreign Service, and we had opportunities to attend a couple of Pride celebrations there. I've been to the Pride celebration in Washington, D.C. Anywhere else in the U.S.? I don't know.
think I've been to Seattle Pride as well.
We're fortunate in that because we have made a lot of progress in the United States and very quickly in our lifetimes, the Pride celebrations are usually that. They are celebrations of the progress that's been made. We've also had, or Zach's had the opportunity to participate in what's more of a Pride March demonstration at the first post where we served at. And you introduced us, but I guess the audience might also like to know that we're married to each other. But so Zach's first assignment was in Panama, and it wasn't necessarily a celebration. There was more of a march.
Yeah. So in places where maybe it's a little bit smaller, you know, the LGBT community might do a march, which is just kind of a protest, more for visibility purposes. We've been fortunate that the Pride celebrations that we've been to in the United States are just really exciting. They're full of love, fun, you know, people of all different backgrounds, families. You know, there's gay families, there are straight allies, there are different booths that you can go to with, you know, food and activities, just a way to get out, enjoy the summer. Our Pride is usually in June, and so it's right at the start of summer, and so it's a great time for people to kind of get out and enjoy the beautiful weather and have a lot of fun.
It's been pretty neat that although we haven't been able to participate in Colorado's Pride celebration for the past few years, we have friends that have been there, and my mom actually volunteered last year at one of the booths to help awareness and to help parents who might have LGBT kids and things like that. So she's taken up the cause.
Yeah, there's so many resources that are handed out, you know, whether it's information on access to health services or legal information for the LGBT community. It's also, you know, in addition to being a place for fun and celebration, it's just such a useful environment full of support. And it's a place where you can feel comfortable holding your spouse's hand in public and not have to worry about, you know, who is maybe judging you because it is really, it's the one time of year where you really truly feel safe being next, you know, being yourself and, you know, showing affection maybe out in public, depending on where you live, so.
Sounds like a whole lot of fun.
Yeah, it is.
And thanks to those events like that, more and more people are getting to know what the LGBT community is. And on the other side of the cone, unfortunately, like in the US and many other countries, including Mongolia, people oppose the idea of the celebration of the Pride Month and or Pride Days or any kind of activities. And I'll say there's a spirited debate under our comment section on our Facebook posts about how people are against as the LGBT awareness and its visibility rises. And I think one of the reasons why people are against movement is because they have, you know, they lack information or they misunderstand certain things. What are some of the most common misconceptions that you see, and how would you explain it to an average Joe like me?
I think that the biggest misconception around the world is that being part of the LGBT community is a choice that someone makes, and that's absolutely not the case. It would seem, you know, pretty self-evident to me, but obviously that's the case. I think growing up gay or bisexual or transgender, if you identify as one of those things, growing up is tough. Growing up is tough in general. Being a kid is difficult. But if you grow up and you realize that you're different in that way, I don't think that many people would choose it if they had that option. And so I think recognizing that that it's something innate within us and that it's, biology or a combination of different factors, it's not something that someone chooses. It's part of who they are, and it's something that they eventually hopefully have the opportunity to acknowledge in order to be their full self and live their life honestly and openly.
Yeah, I think another misconception is that homosexuality or LGBT rights are something that's a Western export, that, you know, it's something that didn't exist in the world before the United States or other Western countries started, you know, promoting or advocating on behalf of the LGBT community. But, you know, I think we've seen that a lot of societies and a lot of civilizations across the world have recorded history of homosexuality or transgender individuals that have existed throughout history. And so it really is something that is natural. You know, it has been seen in many different countries. And it's something that I think we maybe see more of just because there's more of a, you know, more of a focus on advocating for those rights. But we've also seen with the advent of technology and the increase in our connectedness across the internet is that LGBT individuals in far off remote places, you know, small towns in America or small towns in Mongolia are realizing that they're different and they're searching, you know, for others like them, and they're able to connect to them on the internet. And so, you know, education is spreading, and that gives young LGBT people a chance to realize that they're not alone and that there are people out there like them. You know, it's not an effort. There's no effort to increase the number of LGBT people in the world. It's not possible. But by providing information and providing kind of those resources, you know, it's helping people realize, you know, that they're not alone. And so I think that's, you know, really important work.
And finally, I think that, I don't know if it's a misconception, but the fact that someone is a member of the LGBTQI plus community doesn't mean that that attribute defines them as who they are. It's one small component of everything else that makes them whole. And we're still your family members and your coworkers and your friends. And one of the really neat things about well, for people that are fortunate to have good coming out experiences and having discussions like that with people that they know and love, is to have the reaffirmation and this, the having loved ones explain to you that you're the same person that you've always been. You're no different. We recognize that this is one part of you, and we still love you for who you are. And that's not all it's about. So.
Yeah. One other misconception is that, you know, all gay people are acting one way or the other, that all gay people are maybe very fashionable or very feminine, or, you know, all gay men are very, girly, don't like sports. But the LGBT community is very diverse. You know, they're as diverse as the heterosexual population out there. You know, there's LGBT athletes out there. There's LGBT, yes, there are, you know, fashion designers and things like that, but there's also
there's straight fashion designers
too, and you know, just LGBT people are just like everyone else, you know, wide variety of interests, passions, and activities. It's not always easy to just judge what someone's interested in just by their sexual orientation or gender identity.
I think that's a great point to make. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Tony, you just briefly touched upon how younger LGBT community members struggle during their, you know, youth. If you feel comfortable talking about it, would you mind telling us a little bit about your personal stories and your career in the Foreign Service, and maybe how your upbringing might have contributed or impacted or influenced your decision to join the Foreign Service?
Sure. I grew up in Colorado, where we were living before we joined the Foreign Service. And I'm actually an engineer by training. I studied architectural engineering and engineering management, and I worked in renewable energy. I pretended to be an electrical engineer for a long time, and it was a really great career. But I was always interested in traveling and seeing the world. We never went anywhere as kids, and so it was always my goal to get somewhere. And now I'm in Mongolia, which is pretty cool. Zach had a little bit more common educational background, I guess, for someone in the Foreign Service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I grew up in Alaska. And so growing up in Alaska, there's some similarities to Mongolia because it's kind of a cold climate, cold environment. Maybe sometimes you feel a little isolated from the rest of the world. And so growing up in Alaska, I was always interested in, you know, what's outside.
Same here, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, so you're always interested about, okay, what's outside of Alaska? What's outside of my home? You know, what's out there? And so I always grew up with this kind of itch of wanting to see see the world. And so I went to college and wanted to study international relations and major in a foreign language and study in a foreign country. And so was able to do that and lived in Spain for a little bit and during my time in college. And before graduating, I learned about the Foreign Service as a potential job opportunity. And at that time, Tony and I actually started dating in college. And I went to school outside of Seattle, and Tony was going to college in Denver, outside of Denver. And so we actually had a long distance relationship to start out. And so
we've done long distance a few times since then.
Exactly. In the Foreign Service. Posts, yeah. So but after I graduated from university, I moved to Colorado so that we could live in the same place. In the back of my mind, I still was interested in working internationally. You know, I was able to work for some nonprofit organizations that worked with international students. And scholarship students in the United States, actually on the Fulbright scholarship. And so that was kind of my first connection to the State Department, was because I worked for an organization that worked very closely with the State Department. And so it was still in the back of my mind, though, you know, even though I was working with international students and having that international exposure, I really wanted to return overseas. And Tony knew about the Foreign Service through his aunt and uncle. And you can talk a little bit about that, maybe.
Sure. They did it kind of as their second career. They had both had jobs, long careers in the United States. And then before they retired, they were thinking that they would really like an opportunity to travel. And so they joined the Foreign Service for about 10 years and had a really wonderful time and got to do a lot of really amazing things. And I went to visit them at a couple of their posts and got to learn more about the job and thought, oh, maybe this is something that I could do too, even though I didn't study international affairs. And the Foreign Service is really interesting because you don't have to study anything in particular in order to become a Foreign Service officer or a Foreign Service specialist, which is what Zach is. To become an officer, you basically just have to get through a testing process, an examination, and you can have any educational background whatsoever. And so we started to consider the process. We obviously weren't married. It wasn't legal to be married in a same-sex relationship in the United States at the time. But the Secretary of State, Clinton, actually had made a policy change that allowed same-sex partners to apply together and be given the opportunity to be posted at the same location. And so it was after that policy change was enacted that we decided, let's give this a shot. Let's see what happened.
Yeah.
And it still took us a few years to make it happen because
It took about 6 or 7 years for us to get in. But once we actually, I actually was accepted first. And so in 2016, I received an invite to move to Washington, D.C. for my training. And the invite was sent to me in January, and it said I had to show up for training in April. And at the time, we still hadn't been married yet. Marriage equality had become a reality in the United States about a year or about 6 months prior to that point, I think in June of 2015. And so that was a really exciting, momentous occasion for us in the United States, but we didn't have any quick plans to get married because in the US, weddings are very expensive. And so we didn't want to spend a lot of money on a wedding. And so we had kind of just been putting it off. Eventually we were going to get married. But then when we received the invitation to join the Foreign Service, in order to take advantage of the policies afforded to married couples, we had to get married. And so we did kind of a quick proposal at a restaurant. We went out to eat one evening, and it wasn't really a romantic proposal by any means, but just said, you know, I think we have to get married. And thankfully we planned a quick wedding within about 3 months and just invited our family members to join us to celebrate. So we did a small ceremony with about 40 family members in Denver. My dad was the one that performed the ceremony. And so it was really touching to have our family there. And then the next night we rented a brewery and invited all of our friends to come join us to celebrate and had a lot of fun. So it was kind of a quick wedding. We call those shotgun weddings in the United States when you get married really quickly. it worked out really well for us. We didn't didn't miss out on anything that we had hoped for. It was exactly what we wanted. So
after your marriage, have you had the chance to serve in the same country together before Mongolia?
We did. So Zach's first assignment, this was before I joined the Foreign Service because he got in first, was in Panama. And I was actually fortunate to still have employment with my company doing engineering work in Colorado. So I worked remotely, spent a lot of time on the beach, some time working. We had a lot of visitors there. So I spent a lot of time touring people around the Panama Canal, which was pretty cool. And then we went to Chengdu, China for our next assignments. Zach went there first. I got hired shortly thereafter and went back to Washington, D.C. for just over a year of training. And then I came back to Chengdu for a short period and then Mongolia.
And what was your first impressions of Mongolia? And before you answer that, I actually want to specifically ask if there was a single impression that was bad, but now it's gotten a little better.
Sure. So I found out I was coming to Mongolia with about 2 weeks' notice.
Oh.
And I did not know a whole lot about Mongolia. It wasn't a place that I expected to be assigned to. Our tour in Chengdu got cut somewhat short.
And when was this, by the way?
This was just over a year ago. And I was back in Washington, D.C. after leaving China. All the people that decide where we were going were doing their work behind the scenes, trying to figure out where all of us who just left the consulate there should go. And I got the assignment and I said, wow, I guess I have to learn about Mongolia because I'm going there in a few weeks. And so it was actually really cool to learn about the connection, the sister city connection with Denver, and the fact that I was going to an embassy that's located on Denver Street. What? So that was really, really cool. And then my first impression, unfortunately, was learning that I was going to be in quarantine for 5 weeks upon my arrival, which I learned after I got assigned here. Luckily, it turned into 3 weeks while I was in quarantine. But my first impressions were just from the Novotel window, staring out at the beautiful city and Bogd Khan and watching autumn disappear. So I'm very excited this winter to experience fall in Mongolia.
Awesome. What about you, Jack?
Yeah, I arrived a few months after Tony. After we left China, I was able to spend some time with family at home for a little bit. So that was great. So I actually arrived to Mongolia in the middle of winter and also had the 3 week quarantine experience, which wasn't too bad. But arriving in the middle of winter was quite a shock, actually. Like I said, I am from Alaska, but Alaska doesn't quite, at least the part of Alaska I'm from, doesn't get quite as cold as Mongolian winters. You know, I've had 20, 30 below zero before, maybe once, maybe
Celsius?
Twice, Fahrenheit, but it gets kind of close. Oops, sorry. So coming to Mongolia in the middle of winter and experiencing 35 below Celsius was a bit of a shock to me. But similar to Alaska, you know, once you hit April or May and it gets about, above zero Fahrenheit, which is still, you know, minus a few degrees Celsius, you know, it starts to feel really warm. You know, once it gets to zero Celsius,
exactly.
It's hot. Just arriving in the winter and, just seeing how beautiful it was even in the winter made me super excited for summer to get here. And this summer has been beautiful. You know, every time we look at the mountains, I'm just kind of in shock that I get to live here in this beautiful, beautiful place and have really enjoyed learning about the connections also that exist between Mongolia and Alaska too. I didn't know that there were so many partnerships between my home state and Mongolia as well.
It's almost like a match made in heaven.
It
true.
Is.
I don't know why, but it's making me weirdly prideful about someone from Alaska saying that Mongolia is colder. I don't know. But anyways, I just wanted to briefly talk about what you do here at the embassy and what you really like about your job. What do you look forward in a typical busy day when you're coming into the embassy? What do you look forward to the most?
Yeah, so every day at the embassy is a new challenge and a unique experience. And I love coming to work every day for many reasons. You know, the people that we work with, every embassy has a majority of the staff are local staff like yourself. And so, you know, we learn everything from you guys. And so you are kind of our our guides in every sense of the meaning. And so, you know, we couldn't do our job without you guys here. And so I find working at embassies, one of the richest experiences, just getting to know the local staff. You know, the other things that I enjoy about my job, you know, I work in a very busy office supporting the ambassador and sometimes the deputy chief of mission. And so, you know, every day is a different day supporting kind of the work that they do. And it's really the front, you know, I'm on the front lines of kind of American diplomacy work. So I get to see that every day. You know, as a office management specialist, I'm usually a little bit more behind the scenes. You know, I don't often go out and, you know, do meetings and that sort of thing. I'm not really the face of a diplomat.
Except when you were in that July 4th video that we did.
That's true, yeah. So that's why I love all the public affairs opportunities to get involved. So yeah, I'm usually on the back end, kind of behind the scenes, but I do get to kind of see everything up close, and I feel pride knowing that I kind of help facilitate some of that work.
Awesome.
For me, as a consular officer, there are lots of challenges and lots of rewards. Consular work can be kind of challenging. In a lot of posts, it's more challenging than it is here because it's grueling and there are a lot of visa interviews every day. During COVID, we've had fewer applications, and people are probably aware that we've had fewer appointments, which has been a challenge for some. But it's also incredibly rewarding to issue visas to people who are going to make their dreams a reality in the United States. So getting to send students off to school, lots of students at this time of year, and I think I've seen two going to University of Colorado Boulder, which makes me really excited when that happens. That's where I went to school. But dealing with immigrant visas and seeing people who are going to travel to the United States and be reunited with their family members there is pretty rewarding work. Yeah.
Can we talk a little bit about your hobbies?
Sure. I think we both grew up in places that are all about the outdoors, and so a lot of our hobbies are outside. Which is also a great reason that we ended up in Mongolia. So we love hiking and biking and skiing, and we also love indoorsy activities. We love board games and what else?
Yeah, I enjoy cooking.
I enjoy eating.
running. I ran my first marathon just over a year ago, so that was exciting.
In China,
actually, yeah.
I rode the subway and I popped out every few stops and held up a sign. That's how I run a marathon.
Yeah.
It's great.
And reading and, you know, hanging out with friends is really, you know, we really enjoy that.
August is obviously the Pride month here, but also it was the Olympics month. And as you might know, Mongolians are very enthusiastic. Some are very passionate about their Olympic athletes. Have you had the chance to watch the Olympics? And I wanted to ask what it means for somebody like, for example, Tom Daley, who was this British diver and YouTuber who used his platform to send a positive message to the LGBTQI plus youth on the podium. And he was also, I think, seen suing his sweater of sorts. And it was trending, and Mongolians were really, you know, happy about it and really had positive things to say about it. What does it mean for you to have someone represent your community in a way, but also use their voices for a positive message and raise awareness?
Yeah, I think it's fantastic. You know, Tom Daley is a great role model for LGBT youth. And we've seen more and more athlete role models come out of the closet over the last few years. You know, I think some of the audience may be familiar with an American freestyle skier named Gus Kenworthy, who came out on the cover of ESPN magazine several years ago. And so, you know, I think the more athletes that we have that can be role models and can come out of the closet and show that, you know, it's possible to be an openly LGBT individual and be successful, I think that's fantastic. You know, when we grew up in the, you know, the 90s, we didn't have a lot of out LGBT role models out there. And so there wasn't a lot of people to look up to. You know, as a kid, if you're growing up in a rural community, if you don't have kind of those positive role models, and you start to find out that you're different from everyone else, you don't really know what the future holds for you, other than what sort of messages you might receive from kind of your community. And if you're in an insulated community where the only messages about LGBT people are that they're bad, then you really have no hope. And so I think seeing these athletes come out on the world stage has been really moving and really important.
Yeah, I agree. I think Tom Daley is a great example, Gus Kenworthy. I think outside the Olympics, you're starting to see more and more athletes come out as well. And it's not just about athletes, but people in all professions and all walks of life to be out and proud and living their best lives.
Yeah, actors, musicians, newscasters. You know, I think the more that people come out and the more people realize that they know they have a friend or they have a family member who is part of the LGBT community. And when they recognize that their family member is part of that community, it really helps them understand, you know, this person is still the same person that I've loved. This person isn't any different. Like, this is part of who they are. And so I think the more people that come out, the better it is for everyone, because it's, you know, it's a learning experience for everyone too. You know, if you don't know anyone who's part of the community and you form your opinions based off of everyone else's opinions, right? And so if you learn that you have a family member, someone that you love that is part of the community, then that might make you start to think and readjust and reevaluate some of your preconceived notions and realize, oh, you know, this person is exactly who they were before, and now I know and I love them, and they're, you know, they still get my, I still support them.
And what was your, sorry to cut you off, what was your favorite Olympics moment if you watched it?
Sure. So I don't have specific Olympic moments that jump out to me, but the best part to me was just hearing from my colleagues and friends here in Mongolia about how invested they were in the games. And I've learned that Mongolians are incredibly competitive. And so whenever there was a Mongolian athlete in one of the events, it was a really big deal. And it was cool to see everyone get fired up and excited about supporting their athletes.
And for me, as someone who grew up in Alaska, you know, I love to support my fellow Alaskan athletes. And, you know, as probably makes sense, Alaskans are way more represented at the Winter Olympics than the Summer Olympics. But for these Olympics, we had an Alaskan swimmer, a high school student actually, who won the gold medal in the 100 meter breaststroke. I think it was a breaststroke, yeah. And so that was super exciting because Alaska, even though it's the biggest state in the United States in terms of land area, it's one of the smallest in terms of population. So, you know, to see another Alaskan win a gold medal, especially in a summer sport like swimming, is really exciting. Just to see how the entire state really celebrated her win was fantastic to see.
That's amazing. So now this question is a little bit of a downer, but I have to ask it because you said that you looked forward to coming to Mongolia because you wanted to travel, and obviously you didn't have the most chances of doing that yet. But how have you passed time during the pandemic?
Sure. So during the lockdown, we've done a lot of playing games, and especially video games, actually, which I never thought I would become a gamer. But when Zach came to Mongolia in January, he brought a Nintendo Switch with him, and I have since become addicted. So that's been a helpful thing to have during lockdown.
I learned how to bake during lockdown, so
it's a more productive hobby than mine.
Yeah. So I've been baking a lot of scones, and what else have I been baking? A lot of bread, just a lot of bread. So
where do you want to go once you're able to actually travel around Mongolia?
Yeah, there's so many places, yeah, that we want to see on our to-do list. You know, Mongolia is such a big country and there's so much to see, so we want to see it all. We want to go to the Gobi, we want to go to Huzgul, we want to see some of the Western IMX, see the mountains. We're open to going anywhere.
Yeah, literally anywhere is fine.
Okay, so that's all the questions that I had for you. But to wrap things up, we have a little bit of a tradition on our podcast where we do a rapid fire segment where you have to answer the question as fast as possible with the first thing that comes to your mind. Okay. Ready?
No.
Favorite Mongolian dish?
Tsueben.
Khushur.
Favorite kind of music?
Reggaeton.
I like everything. I don't know. Not country. Not American country music.
Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Beach vacation or city vacation?
I think city vacation. Near a beach.
It depends on where I am at that moment. Right now I'm in a city, so I want to go to the beach.
Favorite book?
Favorite author? I like Richard Dawkins books a lot. Biology books.
Okay. It's hard for me to choose a favorite book, but the book that I just finished recently is the Japanese novel Battle Royale, and that was really good, really intense, kind of the inspiration for The Hunger Games.
Favorite movie of all time?
Ooh, Inception.
There's a movie called Stranger Than Fiction. Maybe some people have heard of it. It's kind of an obscure Will Ferrell movie, but it's a good one.
How many languages do you speak?
I've studied 5 languages. I can speak English.
I speak Spanish, English, a little Mandarin, a little French, and I'm trying to learn Mongolian.
Impressive. What Mongolian animals have you ridden?
Just a horse so far.
Just a horse, yeah.
Name 3 things to do on your Mongolian bucket list.
Ride more Mongolian animals. Hopefully a camel. I've ridden what's the one hump? Dromedary? Is that a word?
Bactrian.
Bactrian is 2 humps. I want to ride a Mongolian camel. I want to stand somewhere where Genghis Khan stood. I don't know how I find that. And I want to, yeah, I want to go to those places that you just mentioned.
Oh, yeah. And for me, maybe sled down a sand dune. I don't know if that's possible in the Gobi Desert. hike all the way across Bogdhan and run the Ulaanbaatar Marathon next year. So,
what do I do without a subway to cheer you on?
Yeah.
First thing you'll do once the pandemic is over?
Maybe travel to a few other parts of Asia.
I think spend time with family back home. I was lucky to be back in Colorado for just a very brief spell between China and Mongolia. But because of the lack of vaccines at that time and the pandemic was pretty bad there, I didn't have a chance to really spend any time with family. So that's high on my list.
Super. Thank you so much for taking the time and joining us on our special podcast episode for the Equality and Pride Days. We're doing it virtually this year. So I really appreciate you taking the time. So.
Thank you.
Thank you
for having us.
Thank you so much, Sambo. It was a lot of fun.
I'd like to give huge thanks to Zach and Tony for agreeing to be our guests on our podcast. Now let's hear from our friends at the LGBT Center Mongolia for a special message.
Good day. I'm Inkma Inkbol, the executive director of the LGBT Center of Mongolia. We are the first and only LGBTQI+ human rights organization that protects and promotes social, cultural, economic, and political rights of LGBTQI+ Mongolians. We have been working constantly for promotion and advocacy on fundamental human rights through our 3 core programs, legal, youth, and health programs, since our establishment in 2007. We have been submitting shadow reports to the United Nations treaty bodies and Human Rights Council since 2010. Between 2010 and 2021, as a result of our international advocacy efforts, more than 60 recommendations were made by states to Mongolia, urging the increased recognition and protection of the rights of LGBTQI+ persons. We have been the sole organizer of Mongolian Queer Pride since 2013. We call it the Equality and Pride Days. It takes place each year at the end of August to the beginning of September. The Equality and Pride Days are public human rights-based informative events aimed to raise public awareness around sexual orientation, gender identity and expression, sexual characteristics, with a view to create an equal and equitable Mongolia where everyone is able to enjoy the same rights and dignity regardless of their sexual orientation, gender identity and expression, sexual characteristics. We appreciate the U.S. Embassy in Mongolia for its continued support of the LGBTQI+ community here in Mongolia and its partnership with the LGBT Center. You may find our work at www.lgbtcentre.mn and on Facebook at LGBTTUV. Happy 2021 Equality and Pride Days, everyone.
That's it from us today. Thanks to our listeners for supporting our newest project and sticking with us until the end. If you liked this episode, please share with your friends and leave us a review on whichever platform you're listening on. If you have any comments or criticism on how we can improve, please write to us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at USEMB Mongolia. And of course, if you'd like to learn about all the exchange, scholarship, and other public programs that the embassy has to offer, please visit our website at mn.usembassy.gov. Please wear masks, wash your hands, keep social distancing, and we'll see you on the next episode of the Embassy Pod.